This podcast is uncensored, guys. It contains some strong language, so might want to turn it off for the young ears out there. On this particular episode, we had Cody DeQuisto from Lone Wolf Custom Gear on again. We actually did a podcast with him last year as well about mobile hunting. We get into even more detail in this one, talk about him and his dad's approach to mobile hunting, some of their new tree stand gear at Lone Wolf Custom Gear, and tons of other things. So I think you're really going to enjoy it. There's a ton of information here. This podcast is brought to you by Legendary Whitetails. We can save you guys 10% off of everything Legendary sells site-wide with the promo code THP18. It's almost turkey season, and our partners over at Woodhaven Custom Calls have got a wide selection of premier turkey calls that are just awesomeness. That's the simplest way I can put it. You should check them out. They sound incredible. We can save you 10% off of everything Woodhaven sells with the promo code THP2018 at woodhavencustomcalls.com. If you're in the market for new bow accessories, go to trophyridge.com and check out their new stuff. They got new sights, quivers, rests, stabilizers, the whole nine yards. You can save 20% off of everything they sell on trophyridge.com with the code THP20. If you've watched any of our videos, you notice that we use OnX Maps literally every single time we go to the field as our mapping application on our cell phones. You can get the OnX Hunt app at onxmaps.com right now for 20% off with the promo code THP. And that's case sensitive, so make sure to use all caps THP to get that 20% off. And if you're in the market for new binoculars, go to vortexoptics.com. They make binos, rangefinders, scopes, spotting scopes, tripods, everything that you would need in the optics world. They got a wide variety of products at different price points to choose from. Pretty much got something for everybody at Vortex. Their warranties are unbeatable. It's an amazing company. If you're looking for optics, go to vortexoptics.com. Now let's get to the show.
We rolling?
Are we rolling?
Go ahead, intro man.
No, you intro man. This is your chance.
How do you pronounce your last name again?
DeQuisto.
DeQuisto. Okay.
Yep.
I hear different. I hear like
yeah.
DeQuisto,
there's like
there's DeQuisto.
Like seven different.
That's the easiest way to say it.
Yeah. You just think of duh. DeQuisto. Like duh.
All right, guys. We are at ATA. First morning for Zach and I. We just rolled in from Alabama last night, and we're with Cody DeQuisto. And if you guys didn't watch the last podcast we did with him, maybe check that one out first because we're probably going to reference that one a little bit and then watch this one through. But Cody is a mobile hunter to the definition, I'd say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've always liked the mobile style, man, and I think you guys you guys are hitting it right. You guys are doing what you need to do, and a lot of people overlook that, man. In an industry that I think for a while they're gravitated toward like permanent and comfort, sort of. It's refreshing to see some guys like getting out there and putting boots on the ground and doing what you need to do. Mm-hmm.
Maybe just I know we talked about it on the last one, but basically pretty much every time you go out and hunt, you're hanging a new setup. And you're hunting a new tree basically all season.
Yep. Well, now don't get me wrong. I have some spots that are awesome. That through years of hunting places, like if you pick that right spot the first time, you know that's going to be a spot. Now, technically, a lot of times I'll have that stand out of there. Or depending on how many stands I have on hand, I might have some permanent setups.
Okay.
And like on the home farm in Iowa, we got a tons of stands up. But it's funny, even so, like, I'd be looking at an aerial, like, with a buddy or something, and there's like 60 dots on the aerial, and he's like, what are those? I'm like, those are stands. and he's like, well, where are you hunting? I'm like, I'm hunting right here. And he's like, well, there's no stand. I'm like, well, yeah, like so even to that point, like, I might have a stand by those recurves, but like tonight I'm hunting here because I need to be here. So
well, do you think part of that plays into just like the conditions that day? What type of, maybe just ever-changing conditions, right? It's like, that's why you're so specific.
You got to constantly stay with the changing, like you said, consistent. If that temperature drops, they might switch their food source. Mm-hmm. If that temperature is super high, they might not get up. They might be closer to the bedding area. You might have to creep in closer. Just trying to make that call before it happens, I think, is the key point. And, and then even prior to that, before you're even in the game, just constantly, playing that chess game and moving, trying to get in that position where you can move him for a kill. So, I would probably say at least 70 to 80% of the deer that I've ever killed were on a move-in mission, like on a new stand, new sit, so that's that's definitely, I think, where you want to be for sure.
I think that's interesting that, like, what are you looking at weather-wise, before hunt? I don't think that's something we covered last time. A lot of guys are, ask us what we're looking at. We use Wonderground, and we're looking at pretty much everything on there that we could use to our advantage. Is that something you're doing, too?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, by far, number one, I'm sure you got, is wind direction. Mm-hmm. I mean, if, and then even, some guys got their takes on, whipping winds or slow winds, or I don't really care. I think I get away with a lot of close call situations on those dead calm days with that thermal lift. So that's personally my favorite, because I'm a morning guy myself, and I like getting deep into the timber. So I like to wait for those when I pull my weather app up and it says variable, I'm jacked. When it doesn't even know a direction to give you.
Super light.
Oh yeah, yeah.
It's like almost, yep. It says zero or one.
Yeah, exactly. Like I think the one I use, it just says variable. Because it's like, well, shit, we don't. So
basically,
I
your wind is just going to be going
exactly
straight up.
You get that a nice clear day where the sun's going to come out and heat up the air real nice, and you're going to get just a nice strong pull. Those are the days that I kill the biggest deer and the closest to them, because I know I can get away with
being right where you need to be.
Exactly. And I remember too, and it seems crazy, but I remember when I first started hunting, we and Dad would go out of state together, and we would literally we had a NOAA weather radio that sat on the kitchen table, and every morning we'd wake up an hour before we had to leave, and we'd sit there, eat breakfast, listening to that circulated report of some robot telling you the weather and the wind.
That's cool. Mm-hmm.
Because there wasn't
apps.
Apps or anything. It was I had a Nokia and I was playing Snake at that time. So it was we're listening to it, and that weather station was probably an hour away from where we hunted, and we were 30-minute drive, so even we'd listen to that weather station, we'd get the report, we'd get the temperature, we'd get what it was going to do, we'd get the wind direction, and then we would game plan. Mm-hmm. And even on the way to these little things like this that I remember picking up from my old man from a young age, but even on the way to hunting, every flagpole he was looking at, mm-hmm. every is that wind still on point of what it said,
slightly
you
different
know looking at
area.
The temperature on the truck, was the temperature still the same? And temperature didn't matter too much, but either way, it was all the way up until 2 miles before that property, there was a big flagpole that we knew exactly where we needed to be. Mm-hmm. And if the wind switched, we weren't going there. So I learned from an early age that
pay attention to small details.
Exactly. It doesn't matter what you fucking smell like if you're playing a wind, Yeah. So scent control, that whole big freaking rigmarole of that, I think is just a, but anyway, so yeah, so definitely weather.
And I think like you were talking, you were looking at stuff all the way there. Being a mobile hunter, when you get to the exact spot that you, within 20 yards of where you want to be, that's where being a mobile hunter really pays off, because you're not limited to that tree that you picked out in August or September, where you can make a small tweak 20 yards that you need to make.
That's suicide. Yeah, yeah. I mean, now don't get me, I like getting to know a piece of property, but I never want to go, spend 6 hours trimming a set, because I don't even know if I'll be in that exact tree, mm-hmm. come October or November or so.
And I guess with the way we hunt, just bouncing around to different public lands, we never get too familiar with an area. If you're hunting the same property, if it's calling for maybe a certain condition, you probably know what it's going to be like in that exact tree that you picked out prior, just because you spent enough time there. But bouncing around, it's really hard to call. Dude, if you're down in the bottom, what the wind's going to be doing.
Dude, man, I've seen the wind do some tricky shit, man. I mean, it's you wouldn't even think it was possible. But, I mean, you throw the milkweed out and you think you're in good shape, and then 5 minutes later you get smacked in the eye, and it's what the hell's happening, And then you start getting busted, and it's well, a normal guy would sit there oh, shit. Well, I'm down and I'm over where I'm not getting busted, And then so that next deer that comes through, I still get that virgin sit, I mean, sometimes I'll back out, but it's even making those minor moves and minor adjustments is where, dude, that's when you're going to start killing deer.
How often would you say you'll do that? You'll just feel the wind hit you wrong, and then you'll get down and you'll move in the same sit the same day?
It all depends, a lot for sure. I mean, and whether it's and it might be prime time, and I might know shit, I got to stand, let's say I go in there in the dark or whatever, I go in there in the evening, hang a new set, And if that wind isn't exactly what I thought it was, and I might know I got a set 20 yards over, I'll dump down and just jump over there or pull my shit down and move, just because, like, I don't know. It's like you're wasting time. You're wasting that sit, and you're, like, you know, playing with fire, you know. Mm-hmm. So I do that a lot.
And you can do it so fast yourself, probably.
Oh, shit,
yeah. The problem we have with doing it is we always have two people, so we got basically two sets that we got to move if we're going to get up and move somewhere. Like, we always feel like if we were by ourselves, we would probably do that way more often.
Yeah.
I think that's a really good tip for people that are definitely, like, hunting by themselves, which most people are.
Well, even, too, like, now when you start to add camera equipment in there, mm-hmm. you got two guys, you got all this stuff, that's a pain in the ass. Like, you know, to that fact, you know, like you said, like, when I'm the most successful, I'm not a gear nut by any means, but I like my shit a certain way. And every season I'll go through 10 different pack combinations, or like this camera arm, this pack, this fanny pack, this, you know, stuff in my pocket. So, like, the more minimal I get, mm-hmm. the more, that's when that happens more. And that's when deer start hitting the ground, though. So mm-hmm. it's one of those, like, catch 22s. And I was even talking to my buddy Byron about that. Like, you know, hey, you got to get out and film one of these processes. It's going to be a bitch, because we're going to move a lot.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's sort of where, like, even now this moving game, everything's getting smaller, lighter. And that was one of the big things about, like, designing this new product was, okay, you know, we need something that is the ultimate efficient setup. Like, okay, so setting up the quickest, tearing down the quickest, you know, biting the best, being the most stable, carrying a lot of gear, because there's guys out there carrying a bunch of gear. And that's where, even too, like, you know, the addition of a cameraman stand versus the guy hunting, or, you know, that small platform. I know when I had a filmer, I'd always swing him around the backside, and he'd straddle the tree and just be over my shoulder the whole time. But it's so much trial and error. But like, to your point, it's a pain in the ass, man. I mean, it sucks. But it's one of those. I think it's one of those necessary evils, and not that it can't get done the other way. But I think.
So you brought up the new product, I'd imagine that's why a lot of people are listening in the first place. So. I don't know much about it. I've just basically what I've seen is the couple short videos you guys have done on social media, and the picture of you and your old man with the bucks caped out. And actually, I think a lot of people were curious about that picture of you and your old man with those bucks caped out on the stands. Can you tell the story about that?
So before we actually look at the stand, I'll just give a little backstory. And that's exactly what I wanted with that photo. So coming into this season, you know, Dad and I both had we both made up our minds. We need to really crack down. You know, from his original development of Lone Wolf to my innovations with XOP, but always being that product that catered to the mobile hunter, but was more like, this is for everybody too. Mm-hmm. We were like, you know what, we need to design a freaking stand that is 100% specific just for these mobile guys. So that's what we came into the season doing. So beginning, you know, this season, we were field testing and doing all that, hunting out of it all year, trying different configurations of step distances versus platform sizes. And we obviously, like you mentioned, we got some patented unique features in this stand as well. One of them being, when you pack your stand up, the way that this thing is configured, the sticks stack flush to the stand, creating a flush mounting surface for your gear. But what makes this really awesome is that the seat actually pivots up and slides down and hooks into the platform and locks in place. So it actually turns your tree stand into a frame pack. So you could put a couple hundred, you could put a midget on the back there if you want. I mean, like, you can transport, and we thought that'd be edgy.
It's basically like a little shelf for anything to
sit on. Exactly. It's a perfect shelf for anything to sit on. And actually, we'll take a look at it right here. I think Byron's got it. So, so this is the stand right here. As you can see, you can let it just sit there. As you can see, and that's with an outstretched arm. But this thing. So this.
Anybody
thing,
that has a mobile setup knows that's.
Yeah. So what we got here is, I'll take this off. As you can see, so like this pack, and even in the center upright, there's integrated. there's integrated hook system. So you can actually hook your pack right there so it holds it, rests on the seat, and then you can just run one additional strap if you want. But everything's nice and flush. So right here, as you fold the stand flat, you can see there's these integrated slots. And look, your seat goes right into there. So then that locks. Okay. Now, you're relying on that solid aluminum. I mean, that thing can, that's as strong as you need it, you know? So,
yeah, I mean, that's just, oh yeah,
that don't move, you know? So right here, what we got is the true weight of this stand right now, as it sits, is like ounces under 7.5 pounds. It's like 7.6 pounds. Like, so it is very light. And the reason it's not lighter is because we did not want to sacrifice. You know, a lot of people are like, oh, well, we got this 4-pound stand. Well, it's only got a 12-inch platform, but it's 4 pounds. So we wanted to get at least some huntability out of it. The seat is a full-size seat. You still have the 10-inch, it's 10.5 in length. The platform is still, it's 28 inches by like 19.5. So it is not a small platform by any means. One of the greatest things. So we got the integrated cleats for your. You can fit 25-foot of paracord for a tow rope on there.
That's cool.
These right here, we have machined in grips for those points that you're handling that stand that your finger grooves sit in. Also right here when you're handling it, feel that.
That's cool.
It's got sort of a, just when you're manhandling that thing right up in the tree, and I'm sure you probably felt, it's got a silent touch coating on it.
Yeah.
So now this doesn't, and that's with the silent touch coating. Our weight is, but that is like a micro thin rubber sprayed on, like, so that thing is dampening any noise or clanging against this or when you stack the sticks on and all that, as well as providing a really nice grip for your boots and for your hands and just the feel. We do have two extra leveling adjustments on the platform, like right at the base. So before, we've always had good leveling, but now we got like extreme leveling.
Yeah.
The new offset bracket has micro teeth in there, so it just, I mean, this thing bites down so freaking hard. Patented feature on the stand that
it's really solid. I mean,
it's
compared to some stands that we've used. I mean, it's just solid.
Yep. And this is all you know. So you know, we're calling it. We got this little slogan: American made metal. So this is made from solid aluminum, 6061, right here in the Midwest, here in the States, and like our 6-point bracket. Great offset with that, and the actual micro teeth allow for that thing to cam in and just lock so tight. One thing that you can't really see right here, because on the first model, on production model, in the next few weeks we'll have this, but it's a patent we've been working on. It's called reverse tooth technology, we're calling it. So the back of this stand is actually going to be in the teeth portion angled up from the bottom, so you won't even have to cam this stand like you had to previous. Your weight will allow that thing, I mean, you can cam it if you want, and it'll get rocks out in a second, but now it will never hold up on a shelf, if that makes sense, and you'll have a stable base. Mm-hmm. It'll seat down and actually get tighter and tighter as it's in the tree longer and longer. So it's just, it's really cool for function and feature. Still got the leveling on the seat. Hands down, between the packing feature, what we did with these steps, all made from the same material, all soft touch, they actually, the brackets pivot flush, and it creates a step with a 3/4-inch profile. So now you do not have an extending V bracket. You don't have an extending step. Nothing is fixed. You have a 3/4-inch profile that will slide, and stack on top of each other. So now, you know, two steps are an 1.5-inch profile.
Yeah.
Complete. Like, so, and then they integrate into these plug holes right here. So we have a series of rubber-mounted bushings that come in your stick, pressed through your stick, that they don't come out. And those sticks then press on your stand, creating, and you can get 3 on each side for the minis or 3 on each side for the full length. We have a 2-step and we have a 3-step. So the ultimate, what I've been using this year is, and I don't get super high, but I've been using 4 of the minis. I've experimented with 6. I like 4. It gets you high enough. You know, you can always use an 8 or a screw-in if you want to.
Yeah.
But that way, then, you have a completely
compact.
Well, the biggest thing was, you know, like, so even with the XOP and the Lone Wolf, and it's great to get them on there, but any inch you come out from your back and far away, you just, it's like you're getting pulled down and pulled down and pulled down. So
everybody's gone through brush where they get tangled up.
Yep. Okay. Jeez. So here's the here's the mini. As you can see, and you guys can, you can kind of feel that right there. So that's a very lightweight mini stick right there. You can get a feel of that. It's got soft touch coating. It's got all the integrated grips on the backside, so when you're climbing up, you can really grip on there tight. These are the bushings I was talking about. We didn't want to sacrifice climbability, so these steps are still they're a 5-inch step. They're long. They got a hook on them for slipping boots.
Yep.
We also increased the bed of the step, so it's an easier handle. It feels better on your foot. All that. So that's great. But this is where it changes the game right here. So now being able to do this and do this, and then just plug these things in like freaking Legos, and then these all stack on your stand in these holes. Jeez. So these stack flush. So this is your profile of your complete, and these are a little loose for demonstration purposes, but those will press in, right? So these will all stack. They stack under here. You can get three and three. As this seat actually goes down, it'll actually aid in pushing those down with any weight you put on.
Yeah.
So you got the most smallest profile of a mobile set, so you're not snagging and catching on anything. Real efficient. Also, I think you guys will love this. So one thing I was adamant about when designing this is I get so many questions and so many people, how do you get up the tree in one shot? Because everybody's like, well, this. And I've always just done it barbarically, honestly. I jam a stick in my back pocket or I do something. Well, you know, now with this, so this is how I've been hunting all year. Every day I'd go in, I'd have my 20-foot of paracord in case I needed it. I'd have my pack on the back, small pack, four minis, right? So you get there, bust your pack off the shelf. You take this stand off your back one time. Get to your tree, you find your spot, bust the pack off. I drop my pack and my bow on the ground, and I hook up with the tow rope. Take all my tow rope off the back. I set my first two sticks on the tree at ground level because I can reach really high. Then I take these sticks, shoot them down, utilize the one lock. Okay. So then I get on the tree. I get up my two sticks. I reach back, grab the next one, wrap it around, climb up it, reach back, grab the next one, climb up it, climb up, set my stand, pull all my shit up at the end. And I did the same thing up and down. You know, I got to the point where I was averaging, like, you know, 6 minutes to bow in hand, ready to murder something, you know, to packing up and leaving, you know. So a real mobile-esque. It's just very friendly for that sort of get down and move, like we were talking about before.
I would agree. The biggest question is, like, okay, how do I do this without going up and down, up and
down?
Nobody
likes doing that.
And for us, you know, it's like, well, it's easy because we have somebody to hand it. But even the systems that I've done and you've probably done when you're by yourself, you know, like you said, barbarically, you're just doing crazy stuff.
The thought of not
having
my bow even just tied up to me, like where I could pull it up if I needed to, makes me want to vomit.
Do you know how many times I used to be up in the tree and in November is just – November is a crazy time for me. I hate November, and I never kill anything in November. But there's so many times where I'll be, like, doing that move mid-morning, and I'll be up the tree, like, just setting my stand on, and I hear something. And I'm like, oh, what the hell is happening?
And a lot of times with us, it's because we're setting these up. You're making noise, and they think it's another deer. It just happened to us the other day. We were about to set up in Alabama.
It was yesterday.
Had a buck come sprinting in. And just the thought of not having your bow – at least,
then you can pull it up. You don't got to make the whole trip down, come back up. It's just a pain. So I think it's going to eliminate a lot of headaches and allow for, you know, not only that too. We finally came out with, and I don't know if you guys ever mentioned this, but or do this, but we have a saddle platform as well.
Okay.
So there's been a lot of we've been getting a lot of requests from that for years. I think there's been a demand for it, and we've been working closely with. Brad Kuhnert. So back in the day, he was actually the one who patented the platform for saddle hunting. And that was back in like the 90s. And he met my old man, and then they kind of had this brainstorm. And that was when like the Assassin was built back then. So this new stand has been built in the image of the Assassin, lighter. It's got our same utility upright. It's pretty kick-ass. And that thing is coming in right around, I think, 4 pounds, I think.
Nice.
And we still might even tweak that a little bit more, but I mean, for filming though, I mean, if you're running gun and filming,
have you messed with the saddles at all, or have you? Just stick to tree stands.
I've never messed with saddles because I like to. I shoot all my deer sitting down. Mm-hmm. Like, I just, there's standers and there's sitters, man. And I'm a sitter. Like, I analyze that tree. I get to stand in the perfect position where I know I'm going to be able to kill him with minimum movement. And I just don't, like, I'll probably stand 10% of the time. Mm-hmm. Now,
I'm a 95% stander.
Oh, yeah. See, like.
And it's all just preference. Both
exactly.
Work. I mean, it's whatever you're comfortable with.
Yep, exactly. I mean, so I've never personally, I've messed around with him a little bit. But I have filmed out of them. Mm-hmm. Like, so, you know, they're awesome to have on the back. Mm-hmm. And when, you know, you let the guy go up, set up his set, you climb up and just get right around the back side of him. And if I'm filming, I'm standing. It's the direct opposite. Yeah. I got this weird thing in my mind. So, I know guys who, and Brad, I mean, he's killed some slammers out of those things throughout the years. I mean, he's been using them and testing. Mm-hmm. And we're actually developing a harness, too, that he has patented, or a saddle, if you will. That's pretty sweet. He's got a unique ring design in there for stability, and you know, his whole principle to saddle hunting from the beginning is breaking up that pattern, just like we do with camouflage.
Yep.
So
yep.
You know, being up and out from a tree, just like a branch, you know, and disappearing into the elements, if you will. So he's had a lot of luck with that, and I do plan on giving that a try this year. Mm-hmm. I mean, he always tells me, he's like, dude, he's like, with how mobile you are, man, if you started using this saddle stand, you'd never go back. Mm-hmm. So, but like I said, I'm a sitter, you know.
Yeah.
And now I might be able to get comfortable sitting in that saddle and just hanging out in a seated position, but we'll see.
I think having just like, at least for us, you know, one of our biggest things is just that we have all different, like, different types of tools, and we just way to continue to be mobile, whether that's on the ground, tree stand, saddle,
and
whatever it may
group,
be, it's like
with our group, enough of us have different tools where, like, if a situation calls for it, we can be in a saddle if we need to, if we feel like that's the right thing to do for that day, or we can be in a tree stand, or we can be on the ground. I mean, it's whatever you need to do to get the job done in that situation.
I 100% agree. It's funny because I actually just started adopting a little of that mentality this year. Like, I was always like, tree stand, tree stand, tree stand. If I would see a deer, I would sneak up and hang a tree stand. And I mean, a lot of times successful, but like, I never even thought it possible. Not possible, but I never once thought, like, I'm going to sneak up on that fucker on the ground. Like, I just never even thought about it. And actually, it's funny because now I started, you know, like you said, you know, just tools in different situations. And this year, I missed an awesome buck off the ground.
Really?
Like, it was one of those situations where I was like, I'm going to sneak up on that thing. You know, I'm going to do what everybody else is doing. And I'm like, I see these guys do it. And I'm like, so I got the wind. I got his wind, you know, and I started creeping up, and then I creeped up and I creeped up, and I'm like, okay, it's, you know, it's working. I creeped up more and I creeped up more. And then I was like 20 yards away from him. And I'm like, oh shit, I'm 20, I'm like, I'm 20 yards away from him. And then I'm sitting there like this, and I'm like, what the fuck do I do? And I'm like, yeah. So I'm literally sitting there like this. And then I just slowly, and there was a doe there, and there was the buck, and it wasn't a rut or anything, but I'm like, oh shit, you know. So then I'm sitting there, and I finally get in a position where I can draw, and I'm like, my legs are like falling asleep. I'm like, what the hell? How do I do this? So I just slowly stood up, and then like the doe stood up, looked around, and then the buck stood up and looked the complete opposite direction, and then they were both looking away, and I was like 20 yards like this at full draw, looking at both of them, and I'm like. Like a kid on Christmas morning, I shot right over the fucking back. I'm like, you got to
be so surprised that it worked.
I was, I wasn't even going through the shot process. I wasn't doing anything. I'm just like, holy
it
shit,
worked.
I just sneaked up on that thing. Like,
uh-huh.
It was so weird. But to that point, I'm like, man, I'll probably be doing more of that for sure.
I think it's like, for me, it just, when I started hunting on the ground more and just like being, just like taking all the things and trying to put them into place when it made the most sense, it's like, you just go into the woods with so much, even more of like this free mentality of like, I don't have a setup. Like, I'm not going anywhere. I'm going hunting.
Yep.
And when I find what I want, then I'm going to set up. Then I'm going to be in a position. But it's like, I think just so many guys have this mentality, and I was guilty of it for a long time. It's like, you go in and you're like, I'm going to go to this spot. And maybe you don't have the exact tree, but you get the general idea. It's like, I've even tried to take away that. Like, I'm going to go into this block of area,
until I find something
just,
I like and
right.
then set up.
Oh, yeah.
It's like,
yeah.
Which
because
is probably
subtle,
something that you're doing, too.
There's subtle things that, like, you know, there's a killer spot, and it's like it can change so much day to day, year to year, whatever, month to month. It's just like, and I think when you free your mind of, like, having a specific spot or specific trail or whatever, it's like, then you can get yourself in a better position.
You hit it on the head. And what I always tell people, too, because like you said, we all fall into that trap. And I urge people to just get it out of their minds, because
keep an open mind.
So many times, every year it happens to me. Every year I find myself at some point in time of the season sitting in a spot because of an old memory.
Yeah.
Like, man, I drilled that buck here this year. Yeah. Like it was perfect. You know, this transition pinched him down, and like this is where it's gonna happen again. And then I'm sitting in there, and then like mid sit, I'll get the thought like, dude, why are you here? Yeah, like, nothing told you to be here other than that memory.
Right.
So, like,
I think that's really good advice.
It's so hard to just forget. Like, if you come into a piece of property, I don't care if you've been hunting it for 10 years or 2 years or 20 years. If you come into that piece of property every year and just wipe the slate clean and have in your mind nothing else but, I'm going to learn this piece and I'm going to kill a deer.
Yep.
Like, I'm telling you, your success rate will soar.
One of the things that I've done every buck I've shot since I moved to Iowa, I didn't hunt the general area the next year. Didn't even hunt it. Like that buck I shot last year, it's on that picture. I didn't hunt there one time this year.
Nobody's
on purpose. On purpose, because I don't want to just like fall into like the consistency thing. And that's preference. And you don't have to do that by any means. But it's
like you said, you can definitely find a spot that will work every year.
Yeah.
Like you said in the last podcast, you know, guys that sit the same stand for 7 days out of the year and they'll kill a big one every year.
Every year, but it's man. That's exactly what it is. It's you have to stay in tune with what the hell's going on. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's so much, and it's easy to become, you know, a little lazier and stagnant, especially as the season goes on and you're not having any luck. But man, if you start switching it up and moving to a different area, it's nothing but good. I mean, even this year, I'm sitting here preaching this, and at a point in time this year, I was walking in. And I had the tree, I scouted the piece, and then I had the tree that that was the tree to be in, and I had a stand on my back even. And I was just, I don't know what it was, man. I was wore out, and I was like, you know what? It's getting late. I got a stand right over here. I'm just going to hop up in it. Mm-hmm. And I'm not shitting you. I'm not even making this up. Like a 160 class, and this was like the last couple days of the hunt, that I would have smoked. Like there was this deer came out 15 yards right from that spot, and I'm just like,
the spot
I was
that you
literally
about
just
setting up.
Pouting in my freaking mind, like, what are you doing? Mm-hmm. What are you doing? You know, and then as soon as he got out of sight, I jumped down and I ran to that tree and I got up in that tree and I had the best hunt of the entire season. I didn't kill one, but out of that tree, like, so even missing that opportunity, I'm like, go get it. Like, mm-hmm. you know, maybe he'll be back. Maybe he's going to circle back through.
That's
Let's get over
there. That's the same thing Ted and I did this year in Missouri, and he shot just a huge buck. We watched two bucks do the same thing, cruise down the same trail. We were in the stand or whatever. They both cruised down the same trail. It was middle of the day. We were just like, we got to get down
there.
We sat down on the ground and he shot just a huge nine-pointer.
You have to. And I think back on, like, especially when I was, like, a young teenager, just being like, wow, that spot's crazy over there. It's like, what? What? You know, I was bow hunting and, like, really had never, like, had just very, very minimal experience.
I wish I was over there.
Yeah, man, it's such a good
man,
spot.
It would be awesome to be over there.
Yeah, it's just, like, just a dumb kid, but it's silly.
Like we were talking about Kansas before. We went to Kansas. I went to Kansas with this guy, and we were both sitting, and we were kind of just trying to figure it out. And it's like, he's sitting there, and he's like, oh, dude, he's like, man, the action I seen on this finger. And I'm like, I just took it into account that he said that. And I'm like, okay, you know, next day goes by. I'm like, oh, what'd you see? He's like, dude, I seen a pretty good one that I might have shot come out of that finger. And the next day, you know, we hunt. And I actually shot a deer the next day. And then I was like, oh, so what'd you see? He's like, oh, dude. He's like, I'm getting close, man. I seen a buck come out of that finger. He's like, it's going to happen real soon. And I'm like, dude, why the fuck aren't you on that finger?
Yeah, right.
Like, and he's like, well, what do you – I'm like – he's like, well, I can't get away with it. I'm like –
You gotta make something work,
we analyzed the situation, and yeah, if you looked at it as a whole, the finger was not right for the wind we had. But if you look at if from asking him, well, what did the deer do? Where'd they go? Where'd they come from? It was clear as day to me that, no, dude, get on this trail on that finger. Who cares about anything else? And he missed a buck the next day.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like you gotta play it
based off what you're seeing.
Don't sit back.
Right. Don't wait. Yeah, don't wait around, I think, because it may not be there tomorrow, too. One thing before I forget, because I noticed, or I remember you mentioned something about it. You said you don't get very high up in a tree stand when you're mobile hunting. What's your thought process of, like, tree stand height and, like, how do you think that plays into your mobility? Like, do you think that being mobile helps, like, being able to be low? Because I have an opinion on it. I think Jake's afraid of height, so he doesn't get very high up in tree stands. But it's like,
unless the cameraman hangs it too high, then they have no choice but to go way up there.
But what's your thoughts on that?
So I've always I really get a kick out of hunting low. Like, for one, people, like, somehow think you can't do it.
Oh.
Somehow,
I also think you can't hunt on the ground. So.
Yeah, yes. Well, somewhere down the line, somebody made up this, like, 20-foot, 30-foot. Like, I don't know where it came from, and I don't know where, like, what it is with it about that. But
it's like it's the rule, though. That's that's what gets me is, like, can you get 25-foot? It's like, I never got 25-foot.
Yeah, it's I mean, I will very seldomly set up a very high set. If I'm like, if I find a killer spot, like in a deep, deep bottom, and I know the wind is like, okay, like, you know, I'm going to get that lift and I need to be high. And I do set high sometimes, but like, as far as the mobile strategy goes, I mean, I can get in the tree quicker. You know, there's a lot of times I look for the cover low and I'm seated all the time. And I try and take a very stealthy approach to like everything. Like, okay, I'm not going to be moving around. You know, I'm going
to
be.
You're sitting in your stand ready.
Oh, yeah. Yep. I'm ready to rock.
It to happen at any moment. So
especially,
you don't have to move.
Especially like when I'm running and gunning, like late season and stuff. And I'll find like those thick trees still holding a lot of cover low to the ground. And I'll get two sticks high my favorite is just like a stand and two sticks, two full length sticks. Mm-hmm. Now that I've been using these minis though, I've been doing like 3 to 4 of the minis. Like, it just varies. And I, you know, I'll stack them close if I don't need that many, or far apart if I do. But I feel like there's a weird element of surprise. Like, these deer almost aren't expecting it from that level.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like, almost, and if you're doing your job right in the stand, they almost sort of look through you.
Oh,
I mean, I remember a couple years ago.
They can't see very well.
They can. They just can't see.
Yeah, yeah. People give them. I mean, and they're smart animals, but, like, in some ways, people give them way too much credit, and they overthink everything. Like, I think the face and the eyes are the thing that they pick up. Mm-hmm. And if you can hide those, I think your success rate is gonna skyrocket. But there's so many times, like, where I'll even be sitting there, and, like, last year I had a tank come in, and I swore that thing seen me. Like, he cracked me. You know, he got up on a rise, and he's just checking out the situation, but I'm right in his line of sight. So he's looking through me, and it's like, I mean, he wandered in after scoping the area for 15 minutes, and I was shitting my pants, thinking, like he's looking at me, and he's going to bolt any second. Well, then he started coming in, and it's like I could even see him look up. He's looking up a little bit, you know, he's looking around, he's checking shit out, but never associated that, and ended up walking right by me at 15 yards broadside. Like, and it was just, I've had so many experiences like that, that I know firsthand, like, you guys, you can get it done low.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
So with that being said now, why carry 7 sticks?
Right.
You know, why not make your setup lighter, mm-hmm. you know, and be more mobile in that fashion? So
I think that there's definitely states too and hilly terrain where, you said, if you're down at a deep bottom. I know when I was in
or just
college,
like in Ohio, straight trees like that, where there is no cover, where everything's been logged and every tree is just like a telephone pole. Then I can see why you would need to get high.
Right,
but I've never hunted anything like that, so I don't know.
Yep. It makes sense. And when I was younger, I used a climber more, and I got up higher up in trees just because of the elevation and the tree type. But it's like, Even now, just having more experience, I realized that the things that I was doing weren't necessary. It was more of just, like, listening to that, like, you know, what everybody else is doing, kind of that rule, you know. It's like, you got to be 20, 25 feet. I mean, I would say on average, we are 12 to 18 foot, mm-hmm. somewhere in that. And that's a broad scale, but I mean, the most part, you know, if I had to pick a specific foot, 14 foot.
And
I think something to discuss that I know we've talked about before.
Shot angle.
Yeah, my grandpa told me a long time ago, is your shot angle is so much better, because my grandpa hunts on the ground a majority of the time now, but he always hunted low just because he liked the shot angle better. Your chances of getting through both lungs is just so much better when your shot's not going straight down, if you just think about how the lungs lay in the animal, you know?
100%, yeah. You start getting these guys 30 feet up there. I'm like, oh, man. You know, and a lot of those guys, I think, are trying to maybe – expand the range and cover too much area, mm-hmm. and, you know, so they're maybe getting a little better shot angle, but, like, I kill deer very close. Like, mm-hmm. I've never been a good shot with a bow. Like, I'll admit it, man. I'm horrible. Like, and, you know, I'm decent, but I just always practice at 15, 20 yards because that's mm-hmm. always what I've done. It's close quarter situations. So.
Well, that's where you want them, too, just because exactly. you like that rush
but
that
shit,
you talked
if you,
about
if,
before.
But if you're 30 feet up in a tree and they're 10 yards away, like, that's – or even 5 yards, like – I shot one a couple of years ago that was like that, and a thought ran through my mind as I was about to shoot it, like, I hope I don't hit this thing. Like, or I'm like, wow, there's not – I literally thought, there's not much to aim at here.
Uh-huh.
And I think about even having that thought, and it's like, yeah, it's just so much nicer being – it's so much nicer having a garbage can there.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you know, yeah. like you can be off, you know. Yeah,
you just – yeah, your yeah. pin, your pin it feels like it can float so much yeah. more. My favorite shot on one was in the lowest tree stand I've ever shot at a buck. It was in Nebraska, and we were like – maybe the bottom was 10.
And there was
maybe.
A rise in front of
and
us.
It, yeah. And it
oh, was yeah. Oh, shit. So, yeah, dude, you were like level.
Yeah. I mean, that was like, I didn't even think. Like, it was just like, put the bow up and shoot. Like,
yeah. Yeah, like that one that I was telling you that looked me right in the face. He was actually, it was weird. He was on an upward angle.
Love you.
Because, like, I was in this little crotch, and there was this hard ravine that jetted up to a crop field. And I banked on that evening, actually. Like, the wind was blowing the wrong direction, but it was... I knew the thermals were going to take over by the time anything moved that far. So the wind was actually hitting me in my right cheek, and I was set up for that seated shot. And then all of a sudden, that suck started to happen, and I'm like, boom, money. And then that buck came out, and he came up, but he was actually, like, up the rise. So I'm like, I mean, when I went to get my arrow, it was like 100 yards away. It sailed through him and went, I mean, like, shit, that deer's rack actually fell off right after I shot it because it was late season.
Really?
I was so pissed. He ran and crashed in the 20 yards away, and I was like a giddy school kid running up to it, and I'm like, it's tiny. Like, what the hell happened? And then I looked, and half its rack was laying off the ground. The thing was like 175, but it looked like a little, and I'm like, oh, my God. God damn it. I was so pissed.
They could fix anything.
But late season, though, like, dude, that low hunting, that moving, man.
Tell me more about that because that interests me in the fact of, like, I've never been – I'm so much more of an early season guy.
Oh, yeah.
And especially now that I've started hunting September in different states, it's like I don't want anything. And I'm not a cold weather guy. I'm a fair weather hunter. Yeah. I like to be warm. I'm kind of a wimp. But I'm interested in – like I see a lot of the pictures that you have and stuff of like you with late season bucks. Like what – obviously there's like so many – I know there's so many fine details, but like – what is it about late season that you feel like gives you an advantage? Because I do see that you have a lot of success, and that's always interested me about your
and
hunting.
And it's a time when not a lot of people are having
right.
success. So
I would say, like, so even looking at it as a whole, like, and I had this realization this year, but and to answer your question quick and then to elaborate, I like late season because I treat it like early season.
Mm-hmm.
Early season by far is my favorite time to hunt. 80% of the deer that I've shot are in early season, and the other 20 are late season. It was funny because I was talking to my buddy this year when I missed that one in November, and I was like, dude, I just thought about it. I've only shot one buck in November my entire life.
Yeah.
And that was like November 28th or something, like, mm-hmm. you know, right on the cusp. And
yeah.
Like, out of all every deer I have on the wall, and I was like, wow, you know. So everything happens early October and then late as the season's winding down, and I treat it like early. Those bucks are not. I'm a very detail oriented person, and I like routine. Like mm-hmm. I get up every morning, I do the same thing. So like, I feel like I'm able to dissect the deer's
routine.
Habits or routine. 'Cause
that's what they have a routine at
it,
that time.
Exactly. So I feel like, and I'll admit it, I'm sort of like lost in November. It takes everything that I know and everything that I like, and just freaking throws it up in the air. So I find myself maybe overthinking it and just trying to get to. You know,
specific almost.
Yeah, like I don't. It's weird. I always end up failing.
I'm on the ground more in November. That's. I mean, seriously, just like walk around, like stalk is
and,
just like. I feel like because it is just a free for all. Where I understand what you mean. It's like that's why I like early too. Is like, man, I love just like when in what we've been doing in Nebraska is like just straight up bump a buck and then
the
bucks we've got. We've straight up. I mean. Which, like,
same with Kentucky this year too with Ted's buck.
Yeah, you. I mean, it's so much cooler to figure that out and to have that like to go make it happen. And like even
you know the reason why you killed him in the early late season too. It's not like where did this thing come from? Like November can be sometimes, you know.
And don't get me wrong, man. If I would love for a giant to just roam in front of me in November, and that's what I hope for every November. Just never. I don't know. Maybe I'm not hunting the right pinches. And I know a lot of guys who are successful in November strictly look at it as like a aerial standpoint, and they get in those areas that they think deer are just going to frequent. So I try and do that, but late season, you know, when everything winds down and these bucks have bred all the does they want, and you know the does are fine, and the temperatures start getting a little colder, and these deer start getting a little bit more dependent on food, it really opens up a good avenue to to get in there and figure out what they're doing. And I know a lot of guys, and you guys, you know, hunt in the public land, and a lot of people even like with our private farms, like we leave in food, but like we don't even plant food plots. Like, like we're not, it's weird because people think like we got these glorious, we literally, my old man farms it for crop, and we leave like, you know, a bunch of corn in. You know, centrally located on the property to do nothing but save deer from gun hunters.
Yeah,
it's and keep them.
Keep
them around. Keep them
around. You're not getting them there to shoot them. You're just keeping them on the bedding area.
Exactly. So it creates like even you know on a property that you know and you have food and you can find out where they're going to. But on even pieces of public that I've hunted late season and like pieces that I've never been to, but to find that food source is like finding a gold mine. You know, like in a place where there's no let's say there's no egg around, and all of a sudden you hit that locust patch, and they're freaking hammering those pods, and you're like, fuck it. You know, like, and you get in there, and then you get all that action, or they're murdering a little cedar thicket, like, just eating all that browse, and, like, with a heavy snowfall, like, they herd up in these areas, and it's just, it's a cool time of year. I mean, the cold does suck, I will say that. It really sucks, but it just... Yeah, it reminds me of early, man. Yeah. It's just.
I would agree, and I think one of the problems is lately, I guess the last I don't know, 5 years, last 5 years, I haven't really had the opportunity to late season bow hunt. Even this past trip, where we were in Alabama yesterday, it was rut hunting. Like we're hunting those bigger funnels. Yeah. Like that's rut down there.
For sure,
the buck we almost got a shot at was cruising, but it's like. I've been so separated from like, and if I am late season hunting, it's in December with a gun. And it's not, that's not on public land. That's not even close to the same as what you would be doing with a bow. So it's like, there's part of it. I see your success and it's interesting because it's like I really want to do more of it, but I'm kind of too much of a wimp to be honest. But so when you do it, would you say, cause you're hunting a lot in like Wisconsin and Northern Iowa, correct?
Yep. And Illinois. Yep.
So you see like, you're probably seeing or doing a lot of your scouting based off snow then or just like muddy, wet conditions.
Yeah,
right?
That's another thing too, man. You want to talk about the woods lighting up, man. You get some snow. I mean, it's like neon signs everywhere, you know? Yep. So, and you know, a lot of times it's easier to tell what's going on and especially like you get those situations where like when you get deep snow, oh, that's awesome, man, hunting in deep snow because them deer really start to stick to the same patterns and they don't want to work to get through that shit.
Yeah. No.
You know, they start to, you know, take
they're like
the,
cattle in that, yeah, like at that yep. point.
Exactly. And I've actually had really good luck. You know, I hate hunting with cattle, but late season, you know, you get heavy snows and stuff. They start kind of, I've seen it where they've gravitated in there and started using the same trails and shit that the cows were beating down.
Because it's easier for
something
them.
Something my grandpa used to do is, during, like if we'd have a big snow, he would just drive a snowmobile and like make a trail with the snowmobile for the deer, and they follow it. Like they don't go off of it.
Yep. Yeah, I've done that exact same thing. I didn't end up killing the buck, but like, you know, I was accessing the back of the farm, and so like even this piece I was hunting, there's and I think access to, and so I was going, it sucked, but in order to hunt where I was hunting and not consistently blow deer out every single day, I was going around the property, like completely around. I'd park in the backside and walk up, and it sucked. But like I knew that to get a good 5 days worth of hunting, like I couldn't keep blowing those deer and keep blowing those deer. And after about 3 or 4 days of new sets with the same access, I'd get to the same access point and then spider off into all these fingers. And after like a couple days, I came in and I noticed a big set of tracks on my trail. And then I hunted a spot, and then the next day, like you know that big set of tracks was on my trail. So I'm like, oh shit! I just sat right at the end there, And I seen a nice, like, old, mature, like, buck that came right up the trail and spit out into those fingers. And I'm like, oh, cool, you know? And it's those circumstances that get you looking for shit like mm-hmm. that and keep your alert up. And, you know, I didn't end up shooting that deer, but, like, I was in the game. You know, it was the right move to sit there that night, you know, and everything happened really great. So it's
I saw that you killed a buck in a morning, and it was early October this year,
yep.
right, in
yep.
Iowa?
Yep.
Do you want to just run through that, just because I think that's a thing not a lot of people are doing, is killing bucks in the mornings in early October. So maybe,
yeah,
I'm sure it's interesting, the story on that buck.
Yeah, I went into this year because I got some, I think your guys' podcast was the first podcast I ever did, and that was in August. And we talked about, like, mobile hunting, and then I was on a couple other podcasts and talked about mobile hunting, and then I was getting, like, a lot of, you know, like, oh, well, you know, questions and stuff, which is cool. But I literally came into the season like, dude, I better kill one early, and I better kill it close, and I better kill one by its bed. So, like, I started, like, you know, and I got a bunch of footage of that, too, that we're working on doing a small video.
Cool.
Because I sell film, but so I was just, like, adamant. There was a and there's actually a good portion of it, too, is actually there was a buck I knew about, and then there was a buck I didn't know about until, you know, a certain time. So I knew where this deer was coming because I spotted him out in the field and actually got some intel from that. So and this is the home farm, so, like, I've been hunting there. So, like, when I see a buck somewhere, I have an idea where they're going to bed. So I'm not, sure. like, you know, saying this is some, like, crazy freaking magical.
Yeah.
But I will say that a lot of times on our whole farm, it's set up with so many ridge tops and, like, so many fingers that these bucks bed a lot of different places. Like, mm-hmm. so they might, you know, as the wind changes, they might be on a different knob or different point. Or and so I haven't killed nearly as many deer, like, over their bed in Iowa as I have Illinois. Or I have, you know, so, because it's just different. It's, like, a different layout. But I surmised where this deer was going to be. He was feeding out in the opens in the morning, and there was a big square bedding flat that, and it's pretty bluffy by us. So, like, to get up this thing, it's got to be a few stories. I mean, it's like rock bluff. So, mm-hmm. you know, we had a southwest wind that morning. So I got on the shelf of that bluff with the wind coming straight across the whole bedding area, so that buck could scent check the whole thing, you know. So
like, coming up, like, you're below the top and it's coming over.
Well,
the top
I actually
like
was—I was on the rim high,
okay.
So anything coming off was literally going off that cliff and just,
yeah.
and
over,
just sift
over what was ever
invincible.
Was
that's what I call that, invincible. I mean, there was no, in my mind going in there, I'm like, okay, I know this buck is bedding on this rim. Like, where he's feeding, he's got either bedding on this rim or the rim next to it, you know, just with this. I had
that
perfect.
He's close.
Exactly.
You know he's not going to get you if he comes in there.
Oh, yeah, exactly. So that's where I'm like, okay, well, you know, I'm going to hit this ridge, and then I'm going to hit the next ridge, and I'm gonna run into him. And if I don't, you know, I got the wind perfect. So, you know, sneaking up that cliff, we got a good access point that we do that from just because we've hunted in that area before. And then, you know, off the bank. And sure as shit, you know, right probably 7:15, 7:20-ish, that buck entered in the corner of that woodlot with the wind at his favor and checked everything out. Now, I actually had a small buck scraping a tree and then, like, a couple does around me. So there was some activity, but he came in and he was checking everything out. And he checked that entire square timber and then started to ease in. And I was 20 yards in from where he eased in. And 20 yards away from where I had found beds in that corner. So it was just, it ended up like working out perfect. Like, mm-hmm. it doesn't work out any better than that. You know, I had an inkling of where I thought he was bedding. I popped up there real quick, looked around, seen some mature beds. And I'm like, okay, tomorrow southwest wind, you know, slip in there. Boom, he was killed by 7:15.
So you were in there the day before you killed him, scouting
yep.
the beds.
Yep, yep.
And then went back in the next
And that's the next, and that's when you want to do it because, like, it's... You always want to try and capitalize to where, like, it's a little different. Like, Dad used to do it. He used to get in the stand right away, mm-hmm. like, just in case they came back. And I've done that a lot, but I've just, over the years, 80% of the time, I always kill them the next day, mm-hmm. like, the next morning. So, like, to whereas, like, Dad back in the day would have found that bed and hopped up in a tree right there. Mm-hmm. But then he would also been there in the morning, so the deer
right,
would have been
right,
dead either
right.
way. He just didn't want to leave that arrow to chance.
Right.
I knew that I don't like –
So do you think when you – sorry to interrupt you. No, yeah, do you think when you went in there the day before that, do you think he was in that betting area and you pushed him out, or do you think that you went in there and scouted and didn't disrupt him?
This time I think I luckily he was not there. I don't know where he was, if he was on the backside feeding, but I like to try and get in there. Like, I'll look at the moon phase too. So, like, I think on that day it was not a very good moon phase, and it was like maybe 11 o'clock. So I think I went in at 11 o'clock thinking in my head, that deer is probably going to get up and mill around in that timber. So I'll sneak up there, be able to check out that rim, because it's like ninja status, man. You can sneak that rim, and you can, like, just look at the edge and then creep back down. So what I think is that buck got up, you know, like they feel the urge to do when that moon phase is prime, and just he probably milled around, browsed in that bedding area, and then came back to that bed. Now, I didn't go tromping through his bed. I didn't go leaving a bunch of scent. It was still that southwest wind, so... That I'm 100% positive that buck never knew I came up that ridge. So.
I think that's important, though. Like you said, you went in there like a ninja the day before that. You're not burning in there, scouting a bunch. Like, you see what you need to see, and you're careful about probably where you're stepping, right?
Yeah, and that was an instance where, like, yeah, I had that planned out. Like, when I went in there, I knew exactly what ridge I needed to go up. I knew where I was going to walk. I knew what I was going to look at, because over the years, I'd find beds there. You know, it's this little tiny, it's this awesome little corner that, like, it's just perfect for bucks to bed on. They just, so that was like, that was, man, perfect. That was dialed in. That was like, there was a task at hand to do. And then, next
saw
day,
what
man,
you needed to see, and then went back and killed him.
Yep. And that was, man, it was a 10 yards. It was awesome, dude. That's
like
what I like.
Like a
12
point tall.
It was a typical 12. Yeah, it was a
cool buck.
Yeah, I looked through some footage too, and last year I had that buck. I didn't even realize I knew that deer, but last year I seen that deer, and he was probably like a solid 155, and I had him under the tree on a completely, like, the completely opposite end of the farm. Really weird. So they do move, you know what I mean?
And one question, just playing off of what we were just kind of talking about, because, like, this is something that I always battle with myself. And I don't have an answer. Maybe you do. Go into a place scouting, and it's like all of a sudden you're like, did I just, like, stumble too far? Did I just, like, go too far? What, like, if you feel like you went too far, does that ever affect you going back there? Or does it make you be like, well, I got to set up on it today because my scent's here. And, you know, if they come in here, you know, in a time I'm not, maybe in the dark or whatever,
they're going to know I was here, not come,
like,
back.
I think I always get into this situation where it's like, did I just go too far? Did I just walk too much? And I, like, at the end of the day, every single time I try, whether I'm in Alabama or I'm in Nebraska, you know, totally Ohio, different hunting pressures, different, you know, different areas completely, it's always fine. Like, when I have the best sign, it's actually fine. There's still always going to be deer going through there. And I guess... I feel like it's just something that I get too worked up about. Do you deal with that, or are you always just like,
I think I've been in that position before, but I also think that if you find that right spot, you being through there one time is not it's not going to completely ruin that one spot.
And that's the way I feel at this point too, but it's like I get stressed out.
Yeah, you
about
battle
it.
With it a little
and
bit.
And I think with you, a lot of time you're hunting a specific deer, correct?
Yep.
And we're more opportunistic, like we're not necessarily hunting a specific deer. So if you're hunting a specific deer and you booger them, then you got some thinking to do.
That's where it's more important. Like, you know, like you said, when you're at a new piece and you're at a piece where you're trying to get on deer, I don't think you can ever do that. Now, I've had it too, to where I was trying to get a little too close and push the envelope a little too much, and I'm like, oh shit, that probably wasn't like I might have screwed this opportunity up. Like, I've definitely done that. But as far as, like, sign in general goes, dude, I mean, man, nothing is worse than hunting a spot that is just, it's not happening there. You know,
well, and that's the thing, is, like, to find the sign, sometimes you do end up going. I mean,
you have to.
Especially when you don't know you don't know the area, and a lot of times we don't on public land. You know, we're in our home state, Iowa, it's like, or where we're from, maybe grew up hunting public, like, that stuff's different. But when you go into a new state, it's just like,
that you're not familiar what is good, because, like, it varies so much what good deer sign is. And, like, in Alabama, a good deer sign is different than what it is in Iowa,
way
for
different.
Sure. Oh, yeah. Like we were talking about earlier.
Yeah, it's and like you said, you got to roll with the, you know, if you go to, like you guys said, well, if you went to Alabama and you stayed in your thoughts and you didn't get out there, like, you probably would have had a miserable time.
Oh, dude,
like,
we would have not
you won't
seen
learn
deer.
Anything.
We would have not seen deer. Yeah. Like, if we would have went into it and just, like, took stabs on based off of, like, just... you know, what we thought, we wouldn't have saw a deer. We weren't far off. But we wouldn't have seen them, you know. Just you got to, you know, I think that scouting and I know based off listening to the podcast that you guys did in August, it's like, no, that's a big thing that you do. And I think that's just a kind of a thing that freaks a lot of people out. Like, I'm not ever worried that I'm blowing the deer out of it completely, but I've always been more of a, like, give it a day, then come back, and have had good success doing that.
Yeah.
So, like,
just like I was talking about,
give it a day.
If you feel like you went, let things settle a little bit. Yep. Now, it is good to have that first,
first time in.
But I find a lot of times, like, when I go into scout, I do it strategically thinking that, and this all depends on how territorial that buck is, but I go in there thinking that, okay, I'm going to disrupt this buck's average pattern. Since I'm disrupting this buck's late morning pattern, his evening transition is probably going to be different, right? Mm-hmm. So that's how I go in. So I think, okay, I get in there, I just bumped that deer. He's probably going to go about his evening pattern from wherever he ends up now, most likely, unless he's super territorial and he comes right back in. But so then my whole intent is, well, when he cycles back and goes back to the old routine, I will be there waiting, like, tomorrow. And then, like you said, then so it's like giving – it's almost like letting the clock reset, you know, because I've seen him – I've bumped him, and then, you know, you might see him – let's say you're seeing him in the evening and you move in for a morning sit, so you go set a stand, and then you've seen him come out of the same – or you've seen him come out of this spot the first night. Then you hunt the evening the next day just to kind of, you know, make sure you didn't really fuck him up, and he comes out of a different corner of the field. Well, that could be because you just bumped him, and, you know, he came from the neighbors now.
Yep.
But – I mean, you can bet your ass, if he likes that spot he was, tomorrow morning he's going to go back to what he knows and what he's been doing. So,
well, so you've had that work before where you've boogered something up, but you pretty much just sit it until, because you know he's going to come back at some point, so you just sit there until that day and then you kill him.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yep.
In Nebraska this year, we bumped a buck with our vehicle. Like, we were going down. Well, yeah. There was an access path.
Yeah, yeah.
And he jumped out of a bed as we were turning around. He was just, like, down in a thicket, and we hunted it that night. One of the other bucks that jumped out of there came back, but he never came back. Next morning, Greg and I hunted it, got right in there, like right on what I believed the trail that he was coming in on.
Yeah,
loved the spot. And then, but didn't see anything. And then a couple days later, go in there, glass in the evening, and he's glass-bedded.
And he was back right there.
And it's the same thing Brody did in Nebraska. His brother bumped a buck one morning walking out, and Brody just sat it for 2 days until the buck came back. And, like, he didn't come back the first morning, but I think Brody called you, and he's just like, what would you do? He's like, you're like, just sit it until he comes back, because he's probably going to be back.
And exactly. And that's where, that is where sometimes it takes some patience, but you got to think about it. Just think about, okay, as long as I'm in the right spot, or if I'm in the right position for when he comes back, like, you know, they're going to come back to check it out, unless he was, you know, because I've also had it where I'm 100% convinced that I've bumped a buck that had been bumped already and was in a different spot. So, I mean, that can happen too. I mean, sometimes these deer get pushed around, especially, I'm sure, with public land.
Oh, yeah.
You know, if you know, what the buck you guys bedded or bumped probably bedded up somewhere else and stayed somewhere else the rest of the day. So, you know, I mean, I think that's
such a funny thing too. It is tough to know. But what I think, and maybe you agree or disagree, is like, okay, he has that one spot that he likes right now, but there's another spot over here that, like, he may not be using, but he trusts it.
Oh, yeah, yep.
And it's like
secondary,
it's just like, or another buck's generally staying in there, and he goes in, runs that other buck out or whatever. You know, that's how.
Oh, yeah.
And when you find the very best spot, it's like, it almost doesn't matter how much you bump him, how much you go in there. It's like, we hunted a place a couple years ago, we called it the Buck Nest. Was crawling, literally mature bucks everywhere. They were fighting over that spot.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you know, they wanted to be in there. And it's like, it didn't matter how many times we went in there, we saw one that year. Now, as time went on and more people started hunting in there, pressure changes every year. It's like, they weren't in there as much. But it was like, it was the best spot, you know.
Well, but here's the thing, you know. So if you set out to find that spot, well, shit, then who cares what happens next year, what happens? Because that can change. And, dude, that's – because I've had spots like that, too, where due to pressure or due to, foolish mistakes by, like, other people or just getting hammered so hard that they leave those spots. But, like, you think, like, you know, there's going to be a new spot.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, there's going to be a new spot somewhere. Yeah. So, it's definitely about finding that and capitalizing on that.
Cool. Yeah.
Anything else you want to say about the stand?
No. I mean, well, the only that you can, the website will be up today. You can go check it out at www.lonewolfcustomgear.com.
Cool.
Yep.
Awesome. Well, thanks, man. Yeah, appreciate it. It's been fun.
Thanks for having me on, guys.
Oh,
appreciate
it. Anytime. Yep.